Welcome to the podcast at Life Community Church in Gilbert, Arizona. To learn more about our church, visit us at lifecommunityaz.com or join us on Sunday mornings at 10:30. I hope you enjoy today's message.
Good morning, everybody. You came on the right Sunday. We are starting the series I've been waiting on for weeks and weeks. I'm going to call it Play It Forward. I'm telling you, it's a skill that if you can learn this skill, it'll save you lots of grief. Anyway, I saw this thing on Brain Games or one of those TV shows, and it was called the Marshmallow Challenge. Anybody seen that? And University of Chicago, I believe it was, did a study, and they would bring these little kids, 4 or 5 year old kids, and they would put them in a chair, and then they'd put a marshmallow in front of them, and tell them that if they wouldn't eat that one, they would give them 2 in just 5 minutes. And so obviously this was being recorded, and so they would record these little kids, and these little kids would sit and look at that marshmallow, then some would get real close, some would reach out and lick it a little bit, and some would touch it. One little kid just ran away. And what they did this for several years, and then they did the studies on this. This was a 20, 25-year program of these kids when they hit adolescence, when they hit teenage years, when they hit young adulthood, and they really did find a pattern in children 4 and 5 years old waiting for delayed gratification, what happened to them as they were teenagers and young adults. And it was a very interesting study. I believe at University of Chicago, might have been University of New York, but one of those. And it was very interesting to watch those little kids. It was really, really cute, first of all. And so I'm talking today, and I'm starting my series on playing it forward. If we can understand how to play it forward, where's this taking me? Where am I going with this whole thing? And if you can understand how that whole deal works, I think it saves you lots and lots of grief. We've been talking about unconscious thinking, not subconscious thinking. The last 3 weeks or so, we've had these videos, and I've really enjoyed them, above the line, below the line, and unconscious thinking. And I call it discipleship, really and truly, are things you learn young, hopefully as a child. Maybe you didn't find Jesus till you weren't a child, but there are things that become part of your life that just direct the way you think. It's not even you got to think about it consciously and you got to worry about it. It just becomes part of your life and your life system, your life paradigm. And so when it comes to temptation, I think there's something to be learned just by from our unconscious thinking. And so I want to share that over the next several weeks. Today is introduction, so you come back next week and it'll be even better. So number one, in your bulletin, temptation is not just an event, it's a pathway. Temptation's just not an incident. See, and that's playing it forward. Where's this thing taking me? See, that's why as old guys, when you see younger people heading down a pathway, and they said, Pastor, it's just an event. Dad, is just an event. It's just a phone call. And us old guys, no, it's not. It's taking you somewhere. And they say, really? Who's old enough to have been called old before? And who's old enough to have seen people walk into some destruction? Do you ever watch a movie and you want to yell at the TV, don't go to the basement? That's where the wolf man is. The Frankenstein, whoever the monster of the day happens to be, don't go there. Remember, who remembers Return of the Jedi? 1977. Empire Strikes Back, 1980. You guys, most of you, some of you are not even that old. You remember watching it later. And when Darth Vader says, it is your destiny. Leave them and come with me and we'll rule the galaxy together. You want to yell at the screen? Don't do it! It's not your destiny. It's taking you down the wrong path. And so first thing to understand, it's not just a temptation. It's not just an event. And there is always more at stake than what we think during temptation. Remember that. There's always more at stake. It's not just that event. It's just not, maybe I should call her back. Maybe I should invite him over. Maybe I should, there's more at stake. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. Number two, temptation has less to do with self-control and more to do with confidence in God. Oh, come on, Delmer. What are you talking about? It has less to do with self-control. Used to call it the white knuckle club. I'm going to be good. I'm going to be good. I'm going to be good. Remember when your mother-in-law comes over, I'm going to be nice. I'm going to be nice. And bop, there it goes. Did anybody know what I'm talking about? Now, my mother-in-law has gone to be with the Lord, and she was a very nice lady, so I'm not going to go there. But temptation has less to do with self-control and more to do with confidence in God. See, I think there's insight here, guys. And I think what I'm going to help you us understand over the next 3 or 4 weeks or so is the insight that you can get shrinks the power of temptation. It's not this huge looming thing. It's understanding how the whole deal works will help it shrink. Now look what 1 Corinthians 10 says. But remember this, the wrong desires that come into your life aren't anything new and different. Isn't that amazing? You always think the desires you face are different and they're unique to me, to you. Well, they're not. People say, Pastor, how do you know what to preach? You're just preaching right to me. I just preach to myself and it usually hits everybody. Aren't anything new and different? Many others have faced exactly the same problems before you. And no temptation is irresistible. This is out of the Living Bible. This is a good translation, guys. No temptation is irresistible. You can trust God. You can have confidence in God to keep the temptations from becoming so strong that you can't stand up against it. For he has promised this and will do what he says. He will show you how to escape temptation's power so that you can bear up patiently against it. Now there is more at stake than you think, and there's confidence in God. And these two things are attacked. Because sometimes you think it's just the moment. It's just a phone call. It's just not filling the form out completely. It's just skimming a few dollars off the deal. It's the issue is, can God take care of me? Is God going to supply my needs? Is God really going to be there, or does he forget I exist? Will God be there to help me? And those are the issues that are at stake during temptation. It's more at stake, and there's confidence in God. Number three, the temptations of Jesus fell into three basic areas of life. Okay, now Jesus comes, and he's relatively unknown. So he goes to, by way, his cousin, John the Baptist, and says, I need to be baptized. And John the Baptist says, no, Lord, I'm not going to baptize. You know, I'm not even worthy to undo your shoes. And Jesus says, no, it's really important that this happens. And so he says, I want to get baptized. And so the temptations that faced Jesus were exactly the kind of things that we face. I call them the big three. For the next 3 weeks, I want to take each one of these and go over them. But Matthew 3:16 says, as soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water, and at that moment, heaven was opened. And he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting on him. Wouldn't that be nice to coronate your baptism? Whoa! I've had people, you know, rejoice in the Lord and all kinds of stuff. But the Holy Spirit, like a dove, now I don't know if it was a dove, but it was like a dove, descends on him. Verse 17, and the voice from heaven said, this is my beloved son, whom I love and whom I'm well pleased. I wonder why God said that to him. He was going to need it for what he was facing next. He said, this is my beloved son and whom I'm well pleased. On a side note, there's something wonderfully powerful about public affirmation. God says from heaven to his son in the presence of everybody there, hey, this is my boy. I'm really proud of you, in whom I'm well pleased. Listen to him. Chapter 4, verse 1. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit, and most of us don't believe in that. Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil himself. I wonder if the Lord thought, Father, what's wrong with you? I thought you were well pleased. And now I'm being led by you into this wilderness desert to be tempted by the devil happens to everybody. If you think you're strange because it happened to you, no, you're not. Join the club. God led him into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And verse 2 is really interesting to me. Verse 2, after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. No kidding. Who gets hungry when they start talking about fasting? You know, I'm going to have a fast next week. And you get hungry right when it's said. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Just get hungry right now. After 40 days, and 40 days he was hungry. I guess so. And then the end of that verse says, and the verse 3, and the tempter came to him and said. Now, that's what we're going to go next week. You can read this chapter when you get home and all that kind of stuff. But Jesus was tempted to meet a legitimate need in an illegitimate way. The three temptations, three areas of life. To meet a need in a legitimate need in an illegitimate way. Hadn't eaten in 40 days. Heaven's sakes, is it a sin to be hungry? No. Is it wrong to have needs and desires? No. And the devil came to him and he said, you got a legitimate need here, meet it in an illegitimate way. We'll get to that next week. He was tempted to leverage God for his own purposes, his own uses. The devil says, throw yourself off the temple. Leverage God for your own purpose. Put God in the spot. We'll get to that again next week or a couple weeks. Jesus was tempted to take a shortcut to fulfill God's will. The third temptation. He said, bow down and worship me. Take a shortcut to fulfill God's purposes. And Jesus rebuffs that. As you see what Jesus did, obviously he used the word of God. We'll get to that. But it'll give you insight. Remember the movie The Wizard of Oz? We're off to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz. And remember when they got there and it was that great Oz and he had the smoke coming up and whoa, and then the little Toto the dog pulls the drape back and the little fat guy says, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. I mean, that's just what you say. And when Dorothy and the Tin Man and the Lion and all that realized all of a sudden, instead of the great Oz that they were so scared of, it's just a fat man behind a curtain with a magnifying deal. Insight into what you face will help you demystify and take the power right out of temptation. There's not this irresistible thing that only I have faced. That's not true. Everybody goes through what you go through. And you'd like it to be different. It's a little different because you've got a different name. It shrinks temptation's power. And there's always more at stake than what meets the eye. There always is. When Jesus was tempted, what was at stake? We were. To be the spotless, sinless lamb without spot or blemish. And to be the sacrifice for sin. He had to be without sin. And after not eating for 40 days, and the devil comes to him and he says, why don't you go ahead and get your needs met like folks really need to? And if he had said yes to that, we would be without salvation today. If he would have used his father to leverage his own rights. And I'm telling you guys, there's more at stake than what meets the eye. And we were at stake during the temptation of Jesus. Number four. There are three things that are at stake that I want to talk to you about them this morning. Then we're going to wrap it up. There are three things at stake during the temptation of Christ. Letter A is your future. Isn't it amazing how easy it is to see out the window and how hard it is to see in the mirror? When you see somebody else heading down the wrong path, when you see your teenagers making foolish choices, when you see people going down a direction, you can just scream and say, hey, hey, hey! And sometimes we do, because we know where that path leads. So when you see somebody else on that path, it's so easy to see. But when you see yourself on that path, you think it's just a lunch. It's just how business is done nowadays. You shouldn't have to pay more than you need to. And see, because it's easy to see somebody else. But when you look in the mirror, but it's your future that's at stake. Better be your family. People who love you. People who depend on you. It's other people's futures. I tell you, some of us here today are either blessed or not. Because maybe your mama just couldn't stop taking those little pills. And it broke up the family. Maybe your daddy had way too many friends and girls that he was running around with. And it broke up your family. Or maybe the lifestyle that your parents had, you had no choice in that. They just spent and spent and spent, and they fought so much over money that they finally ended up splitting up, and it affected you. You're some little kid that got tucked in by a stepmama or a stepdaddy or any of that kind of stuff, and it affected you. Because somebody couldn't say no to whatever. So there's more at stake than just your own future. There's the future of people that you love. People that you care for. People who depend on you. I forget his name. I'm embarrassed. I forgot his name. The Holocaust survivor that just died last week. Weissel, I think his name is. Anyway, had his foundation. A Holocaust survivor, to give me a little background. Holocaust survivor spoke and wrote, won the Nobel Peace Prize. Wonderful, wonderful man. Started a foundation to help Holocaust survivors and help all those kind of people. And I tell you, he invested with a guy out of New York, Bernie Madoff, and lost it all. He suffered. The people he was supposed to help suffered. The collapse of these kinds of things because somebody was really greedy. 30 billion wasn't enough. You needed 40, 50 billion. Other people suffer who depend on you. People you work with. People that work for you. Depend on you. To walk with integrity. To walk with honesty. People that you lead are depending on you. And so it's not just your future. It's your families, whether it be your work family, your church family, depend on you. And let her see your faith. Does that mean like I'm not even a Christian, I won't go to heaven? No, I'm not talking about that. But your faith, your confidence in God. See, and I'm not want to go there, too bad, but you know, we call it they made a mistake. And you want to say, a mistake is what you make in your checkbook when you forget to carry the three. When you add 10 numbers together and you get the wrong answer. That's a mistake. Sin is not a mistake. Guy's having some kind of affair. That's not a mistake. Those are sins. Mistakes are when you can't add numbers together right. Or something like that. And what happens to people, their confidence in God gets shaken. See, when we sin, we damage our connection with God, our accountability to God, and our confidence in God. When we sin, that's damaged. That's hurt. Do you mean you're not a Christian? No. No, it doesn't mean that. See, people usually don't backslide. They don't walk away from Jesus. They don't drift off into some kind of a non-belief thing because of some theological issue. The truth of it is we violate our conscience on a regular basis. And the first time it happens, you just feel terrible. Ooh, man, I just feel terrible. Oh, it's just wrong. And, oh, Lord, forgive me. Or you call the priest or you quote John 1:9 or you do so whatever it is you do. And then the second time you think, well, I shouldn't have not done that anymore and do that anymore. But after all, business is business and blah, blah, blah. And about the third or the fourth or the fifth or the 32nd or the 154th time, you think, you know, I'm not even sure that's really wrong. You know, but I was raised in that kind of a religious, evangelical, Pentecostal, fundamental, where they're always ragging on something that's wrong and guilt, and I'm not even sure, and all of a sudden, I think you think your way out of belief. I don't think you think your way out of it. I think you misbehave your way out of believing. I think that we've learned to pick up what our English 101 teacher said about the Bible not being real and all that kind of stuff. But I think we learned to couch on that when we've never said, I've misbehaved my way out of conscience. And I'm not even sure it matters anymore. I'm not sure the Lord even cares about that kind of stuff. Because every time it happens, we feel less and less guilty. You know, that church down there, they're always trying to make you feel lousy just about being a human. And I think we behave our way out of faith. We lose faith. We lose confidence that God is really there to help you. That God really can be trusted. See, that's what I say. It's not just a matter of incident. I think it's a matter of confidence in God. See, the issue of temptation is, can God be trusted? If I do a full disclosure on this form, that's going to cost me $5,000, $30,000, $2,000, whatever the numbers are. You know, God, you know, and I was going to tithe on that, Lord, the less I could give. And so we have interesting ways of behaving ourselves right out of the conviction that the Lord would send you. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Remember the first time you skipped a tithe? Those of you that were into the tithing thing. First time you skipped a tithe, oh, Jesus, I'm so sorry, boy, and after 2, 3, 5, 10, 30 times, you think, you know, I'm not sure that church needs it anyway. Look at the fancy building they have and those colored lights. And I don't think, and I tell you, you think your way right out of it. You behave your way right out of it, guys. I think this is really good preaching. So I'll take a breath together. Will God really come through for me? Or has he forgotten me? I can't tell you how many people kind of struggle with, has God forgotten me? Does God even know I live? Does it even matter to him? I think we behave our way into that kind of a situation. Isn't it amazing how we don't like liars? Is anybody here just especially fond of people who lie, who don't tell the truth? No. You never say, now, kids, I want you to be sure to learn how to lie well. No. We don't believe in lies. The secular world doesn't believe in lies. Don't lie, don't lie, don't lie. Isn't it amazing how it's so scorned on and so frowned upon, and yet when we get in a pinch, we do it. Now, I mean, not we. I mean, the other folks in the, you know. No, isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing how our culture, as secular as it is, doesn't like people who cheat on their spouses? That's why it's called cheating. Because it's not right. No one ever sat down with their son-in-law. Said, son-in-law, I want to make sure that you cheat on my daughter. No, that doesn't get said. Paul takes the shotgun and says, if you do, I'll get you, and on and on and on, those kind of things go. But isn't it amazing how that becomes an option when the heat's there? That we would do something we don't even believe in. Well, Pastor, I'm just a normal guy. Just a normal lady here, and I got these deals going on. See, sometimes the message is control yourself, control yourself. And I think there's some insight here that'll help you. There's some stuff going on here that can help you. Put it up on the screen, Austin. When you're younger, it's your future that's at stake. When you're a bit older, it's your legacy that's at stake. Talking to some of you young married, some of you teens, got your whole life ahead of you. So when I say it's your future, it is your future. Those of us been around a while, and any grandmas, grandpas like me that are here, you know your future is your legacy. And I think that's what's at stake. The tragedy of Old Testament kings who once walked with God and stood with God and lost it. Pride, arrogance, whatever the deal would be. So it's a matter of facing temptation with insight. What a tragedy be to save for a lifetime for your kids and grandkids and all that. And then do a Bernie Madoff situation and lose it all for your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren that follow. So, I want us to do something a little different than we normally do, something that I don't like to do whenever I'm in church. And the preacher says, repeat after me, I never do. I think, that's dumb. Any other, don't raise your hand. Don't, you men, I know what you think. Being a former man myself, I understand that thing. Put that closing screen up there, please, Austin. Temptation, you will not have my future. You will not have my family. And you will not have my faith. I'm going to say it again, and then I'm going to ask you to repeat it with me. I think if you go into temptation with options of what you might do, you're dead in the water. When I used to tell teenagers talk to them about premarital sex and being a youth pastor and all that kind of stuff, I would say by the time you get in the back seat, the decision has already been made. But you're not a youth group and I'm not the youth pastor. And we can all thank God for that. How many of you know if temptation is going to be that banana cream pie? The battle has already been lost when you ordered it. When you went to the Cheesecake Factory, you were just falling in right there. And when you told yourself you're going to split it with your spouse, that means she gets one bite and you eat the rest. Come on, I'm a master of this. I know how this works. The battle at that point is already lost. So it's with resolve that in a minute, not now, that we're going to say temptation. Now, Pastor, you're talking to the devil. I'm not sure I believe in that. That's fine. Don't believe in it. We all understand temptation. Whether you're a church guy or not, whether you're a Bible guy or not, everybody understands temptation because we all believe in it. Why? Because we've all been tempted. Sometimes we make it, sometimes not so much. So temptation, you will not have my future. You will not have my family, and you will not have my faith. When I lay my head on my pillow for the last time, much like Chris, your husband, like Fred. Fred passed away 6 months or so ago. When I lay my head on the pillow for the last time, you want there to be a childlike confidence in God that He is able to take care of things. He is able to meet me where I'm at. As a younger man, that meant one thing. And now a few years on me, that means something else. But that God is there. And He's intimately and infinitely connected to me. In the simplicity of all that, temptation will not destroy my faith, my confidence in God. So, what I want you to do is repeat after me. And if you all do it the first time, it's just one time. And we've got watchers out there. No. Let's say, I'll say it, then you repeat after me. Temptation. Temptation. No, we've got to do a little better than that now. Temptation.
Temptation.
You will not have my future.
You will not have my future.
You will not have my family.
You will not have my family.
You will not have my faith. There's
some
next step cards that are in your bulletin. Would you write down what you're going to do with what you've heard today? How has God talked to you today? What's your takeaway? I think there's something that happens when we put things in black and white. Make a concrete deal out of it. Let me pray for you. Heavenly Father, I thank you for these, your people. Lord, I pray you'd honor and bless them. Lord, you would cause us to rise against temptation and bring victory. I pray that in Jesus' strong name, amen.